Welcome again, everyone, to our program today. My name is Chris Keneally, your presenter with Copyright Clearance Center, and we're very happy to have you join us for a program, a kind of a prep session, if you will. There won't be any tests or pop quizzes at the end, but we do think we will provide you with some really fascinating background on the current trends in the K-12 student assessment market. As probably all of you understand, the K-12 student assessment market is constantly evolving. In recent years, states have faced the emergence of next-generation assessments, computer-based and computer-adaptive testing, Common Core state standards, new assessment models, and much more. But the questions you're asking yourselves are, what developments will impact testing next? What trends are still developing? And we're going to try to get some answers to these trends and examine how they'll impact assessment programs. And that will shape what you do in terms of planning, developing, and implementing assessments in the future. And indeed, joining us today on the webinar are a diverse group of people involved with these questions, from assessment developers themselves, to publishers, to representatives of various school districts at the local and state level. And we are very happy indeed that you can join us today. So in the next 45 minutes, what can you expect to happen? We're going to have a look at the various issues that we've just raised, including the localization of assessments, the trend toward opting out, and the rise of computerized testing. But with that, I want to bring in our main guests for the program today, Barry Topol, who is managing partner with Assessment Solutions Group. Barry, welcome to our webinar.
Thank you, Chris. I'm happy to be here.
Well, we're looking forward to the discussion. Barry Topol is currently managing partner of ASG, Assessment Solutions Group, a firm providing assessment cost management and state accountability systems analysis and consulting to states, universities, and other nonprofit institutions. Since forming ASG in 2009, Barry Topol and his colleagues have worked with a number of different states, as well as assessment consortia, to assist them in designing their assessment and accountability systems. Barry has presented at numerous congressional staffer briefings, industry working meetings, State Board of Education meetings, local government sessions, as well as state consortia governing board conferences. And from 2005 to 2008, he was CFO for a major educational publishing company. So clearly a background in these issues, but also some experience with telling a clear and engaging story. So we're very happy that Barry can join us today. And Barry, you know, there's a lot to try to cover here, and I know that you really follow a variety of these issues from a couple of different perspectives, from the whole notion of what makes for appropriate and successful assessment today, but ASG particularly is concerned with some of the financial issues here, and so following all these trends really is important for the community.
Absolutely. In particular, what's going on in Congress right now is incredibly important. I think a lot of what we'll see in the future really was somewhat dependent on whether we get a reauthorization of ESEA or not. I think the current direction where we are in ESEA will probably head that way regardless of whether we get a bill or not. But if we do get a unified bill, I think we'll move much more swiftly down the path.
Well, something to hope for. Obviously, you're referring to the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, ESEA, and hoping for something to happen in Washington. I won't put it on a scale, but from 1 to 10, we might think it was towards the lower end. But certainly, we'll cross fingers with you, Barry, and we'll watch that closely. But it's ironic because while you are looking to Washington, really what I think you're going to tell us you're seeing is that change is being driven at the state and the local level much more than it has been in the past.
Yes, absolutely. I think one of the big changes we're going to see, and that is being driven by a number of factors at the state and local level, is a decrease in the testing.
Right. Well, that's actually the first topic I think we want to get to, Barry, because, you know, what we're seeing are a variety of new directions emerge. It's a really a dynamic environment. I'm learning a lot about it by speaking with you and others, and of course, Copyright Clearance Center is watching these issues closely as well, and it is fascinating to see how so many different parts of the teaching community, the education community, I should say, really are seeing or calling for a decrease in testing, as you say, all the way up to the Obama administration.
Yeah, it's been really interesting to notice, and particularly the turnaround in what we've seen. You know, with the advent of NCLB, we saw a tremendous increase in the amount of testing at both the state and the district levels. And I think now we're going to start to see that pendulum swing back the other way to a reduction in testing. Now, when I say that, I think we're still going to have summative assessments in grades 3 through 8 and 11 in math and ELA, and we're going to continue to test three grades, one elementary, one middle school, and one high school in science. But I think apart from that, we're going to see less off-grade testing. I think we'll see less testing in subjects other than math, ELA, and science. I expect that the bulk of the decrease in testing is going to occur at the district level. And I hope what we see is that district assessments that don't align particularly well with the state summative tests will be eliminated. And I think this gives us an excellent opportunity for states and districts to work together to improve their assessment systems and develop a much more coherent testing program that really unifies state and district testing.
Right. Well, that would seem to be a really key point there, is this notion of kind of unifying and therefore really being comprehensive, because otherwise it's not just that there are too many tests in some people's view, but there are too many types of tests.
Right, and today what we have really is we don't have, you know, we have the states really focusing on summative tests and then districts focusing on the interim test and formative testing, but there isn't really a cohesion between the two. So, you know, districts don't have the funds to develop their own assessments, so they tend to, you know, go outside and buy something that's off the shelf or use their own staff to write assessment items. And often that there isn't really a cohesion between the two, and so they're disjointed. So the increase in local and district testing doesn't really do as good a job preparing students to take the summative assessments as it otherwise could. Additionally, and this is something that is in the new ESEA bill, it would be interesting to see districts do more performance task type of testing where they can get at a deeper level of student knowledge than we currently are able to test today.
Right, and I think also one of the issues with summative testing is that they come so late in the school year that the potential for impact on the student's experience is so much lower than it might be.
Yeah, absolutely. So really the value of, you know, assessments have many different uses, and you have to use the right assessment for the right purpose. And giving educators valuable information to actually help students is really not a purpose of the summative assessment. The summative assessment is used to let educators and principals and the community know how their schools are doing in general in preparing students for college and careers. So that's really the purpose of a summative assessment. But if you really want to affect the student progress within a current year, you really have to do formative assessment, which is an activity that you do really almost daily, where teachers are making sure the students understand the lesson that is being imparted, and then interim testing, where students are taking tests at the end of a unit or at the, you know, midpoint or some other point in the semester to see if they're learning. Those are the type of assessments that need to be given in order to affect student learning within the school year.
Right. And, you know, one of the directions that the wind is blowing is from the local level. And what we are seeing as an important trend is the localization of assessments. And we have there an interesting example, I guess, of of just this particular point, which is the state of Texas. And you were telling me earlier, as we looked at these issues, Barry, that it's ironic in a way that Texas was anti-trend in 2010 when it came to adopting Common Core standards, and now they're at the forefront. They've got plenty of company as far as trying to take control at the state level, at the local level of these various assessments. Talk about that shift, how we've got to where we are today.
So sure. So not only is the testing pendulum swinging from more to less testing, it's also swinging from a degree where the federal government has a large amount of control and really a lot of emphasis on testing and state accountability systems to an environment where the state is now going to be in control of the assessments and in control of their own accountability systems, and we're going to see a reduction in the importance of testing and state accountability systems. So the states are now going to decide on how testing will figure in their accountability systems, as well as the remediation steps that will be taken in districts not meeting state accountability requirements. So both the House and the Senate versions of a new ESDA remove the federal penalties for states not meeting AYP and give the state all of the authority as to how to work with districts that aren't meeting accountability goals. In a similar vein, the use of testing for teacher evaluation is not going to be required in either House or the Senate bill. That will still be up to the states, and there are a number of states that have codified that in law, but it will be interesting to look at that and see if that starts to swing the other way. And finally, as I mentioned before, one of the interesting provisions that's being talked about today is allowing local districts to develop their own assessments. The idea here is that these assessments will be complementary to the state summit of assessments. So as I was mentioning before, maybe the use of more formative assessments and more performance-type testing that will be complementary to the state summit of assessment. So the new ESDA, I think, allows for five states to experiment with these types of systems, and I know currently New Hampshire is doing that, has a number of districts that are working in the performance task area and integrating that with their state summit of assessment. So as I said, I think this is a great opportunity to unify unified state assessment programs and get a more unified and balanced assessment system that is much more coherent in each individual state.
Right. And while not directly related to assessment, this is an opportunity for the states to start taking control in other areas as well. So when it comes to making decisions about turning around failing schools and doing other proactive efforts to improve the educational delivery system in their states, they are really going to be the one leading the charge there, and it will obviously then sort of have it will cycle back and impact assessments moving forward.
Oh, absolutely, and I think whether or not a new version of ESEA passes, I think you're going to see these trends continue, where states are now responsible for their own accountability systems. They're responsible for deciding how to deal with districts that are not meeting progress, that aren't graduating enough of their students, and aren't closing the gap between the disadvantaged groups and the higher socioeconomic set of students. All of those decisions will now be transferred to the state level from the federal level.
Right. Well, we are speaking today with Barry Topol, a managing partner of the Assessment Solutions Group, in a webinar presented by Copyright Clearance Center. If you have a question for Barry today, please use the chat box in the lower right-hand corner of the screen, and when we get to the questions, we'll get to as many of those as we can. So please do let us know what's on your mind. And, you know, Barry, talking about education in the United States, it's impossible to do it without bringing up politics and so much of what we are seeing by way of trends in education and therefore related trends in assessments is directly tied to politics. And you know, we use the word turmoil here, and I wonder if you think that's too strong a word. Are we really talking about the kind of divisions that we normally think of when we talk about political situation in the United States right now when it comes to assessment and education?
I think turmoil is a good word, and I think we are seeing the same kind of divisions in education that we see, you know, across the political spectrum, and I certainly think it's an unfortunate event. It is, in my, you know, 11 years in the industry, this has really been perhaps the biggest change that I've seen in education is really the increase in the politics that's being played in the industry.
Well, it is remarkable, and talk about its impact, though, on assessment. So what I guess we've seen so far is that about 10 states are implementing new assessment systems this year as a result of some of these political decisions.
Right. I think, you know, there are two key things that I would characterize in the political arena. You know, one and perhaps more than that. So one certainly is there has been somewhat of a backlash on the Common Core state standards. These are standards that were written in 2009, 2010. It was an effort led by the National Governors Association and the Council of Chief State School Officers. The idea being that we needed higher and better standards for our students to be able to succeed in the 21st century. I think everyone has probably seen the results of our students in the TIMSS and the PISA assessment arenas, which are tests that compare how our students are doing with students in the rest of the world, and the results of our students are not particularly good. We're in the, you know, 25 range amongst the, you know, the 40 or so state nations in the OECD. Additionally, we hear that you know, colleges are having to provide remedial instruction to incoming freshmen in math and science and English. And then third, we hear from the employment community that students are not ready, don't have the skills that are required to succeed in careers. So all of those things led to these two organizations, again, the National Governors Association and the Council of Chief State School Officers, to try to come up with a new set of standards that are more rigorous, they require less memorization of rote facts and more critical thinking skills, and to enable our students to succeed in college and careers.
And Barry, I was going to say the irony here is that, as you point out, it was the states driving that effort back in 2009 and 2010. Over the last 5 years, we've seen a characterization, if you will, of Common Core as very much being driven from Washington. So now, in response to that, we've got political leaders pulling it back to the states. But that really leaves the assessment community kind of holding the bag, right? I mean, they are the ones that are going to be responsible for making sure that their states keep up. And while it's easy to drop out of Common Core, it's still left. The challenge is still left to have assessments and to keep standards high.
Right. Well, I think the impact of this is been probably more on in the assessment area than it has been on the standards area. So while a number of states have, quote unquote, dropped the Common Core, they have replaced the Common Core in almost all cases with a set of standards that looks extremely similar to the Common Core. So I think the bulk, though, of the impact has been a number of states dropping out of the two assessment consortia that were formed to develop tests, a next generation of tests based on the Common Core. And unfortunately, that has happened pretty late in the game. It really has happened in the last year to two, and so states have really had to scramble to come up with new assessment systems. And as you mentioned, about 10 states are having to implement new assessment systems for the 2015-16 upcoming testing year. And some of the actions that have been taken in the states were taken really after the states had tested in 2014-15. And so there are a number of states that are really having to move quickly in order to implement some new assessment systems.
Right. And although that slide there kind of very graphically and I think pretty dramatically illustrates the notion of a country split, the evaluation of our performance is at the national level. So am I right that all of these different assessments that are going to begin to be put into force, it's going to make comparative analysis of student performance across the country so much harder?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the big advantages of having students take a similar assessment is that you can compare results across state by state. Once you get a different assessment instruments out there, it's very hard, if not impossible, to come up with a way to compare them. I know a few years ago, PARC, one of the consortia, the Partnership for Assessment of Readiness for College and Careers, and the other student assessment consortium, the Smarter Balance Assessment Consortia, were talking about coming up with a unified scale so you could link performance on the two, but I don't believe that effort certainly hasn't come to fruition as yet. So it's really going to be difficult to compare student progress from state to state. Now, certainly all of the states that are in the Smarter Balance Consortium and all of the states that are in the PARC Consortium can compare results against those states. But at this point, I think we're looking at about 15 states testing on Smarter Balance this coming year and seven testing using the PARC systems. And so, you know, we have about, 22 states that have some degree of comparability allowed to them, but the remaining states will not be able to compare their students' results to students in other states.
Well, right, and you know, and a challenging and difficult situation is made even more difficult today because what we're seeing across the country, particularly in some states, New York most recently reported on this, is that the number of students taking the test is dropping. People are making a proactive decision to opt out of testing. And this is an area where there's a kind of agreement among the two political sides, the right and the left, that not only is there too much testing, but that even testing itself is, you know, sort of put under the microscope. Talk about this, and how surprised are you by this trend?
Well, I mean, nothing in the political environment is surprising these days. And I think that the Republicans and the Democrats are at the same place in this, but they're at it for somewhat different reasons. But you're right, they are pretty much in agreement there that we have too much testing going on, and the importance of testing needs to be cut back, and that's all part of the new design of the ESCA to give the responsibility for state accountability systems back to the states. But I think, you know, opt-outs are a response to what many parents feel is an overemphasis on testing. And I think the opt-outs are particularly high for students in the 11th grade that may also be taking a college entrance exam, for example, the SAT or the ACT, as well as several AP tests. And those, you know, the parents and the students feel that those exams are much more important to their future than the state summative assessments. So as you mentioned, in states like New York and Washington, we've seen tremendous opt-out rates, some as high as 50% in grade 11.
Right. And Barry, that sounds like a fair decision. I mean, one could debate the point, but certainly if people think about the future for their child, the AP tests or the SAT or those other types of tests that are looking forward to the college experience might be seen to be more important. But New York even announced that more than 200,000 third through eighth graders sat out the standardized tests in that state last year, and that's an increase that has grown from, I think, it's quadrupled according to the New York Times, and that represents 20% of all eligible student takers, so or test takers, and so we're really seeing this, as you say, you know, in a large degree at the higher grades, but this is occurring even at the lower grades as well.
Well, and I think particularly in New York, other states that I have talked to, and I should mention that one of the things that Assessment Solutions Group does each year is conduct a state assessment survey with about 40 states participate, and we talk about trends in testing and trends in assessment and what current issues that they're dealing with. And certainly opt-outs has been big on the agenda this year. And as I said, New York certainly is leading the nation in terms of opt-outs at the lower grades. Most of the opt-outs that we've seen in states other than New York, the high level of opt-outs has really been confined to the high school grades. But certainly there is much more opting out in all grades than there has been in the past.
Right. And you know, someone on the call today with us, Barry, points out that it's tied to a variety of issues, including teacher evaluation programs. I guess an important point to keep to bear in mind.
Yes. I mean, I think a lot of people don't think that the results of summative assessments should be used in teacher evaluation. It was certainly a trend that was embraced by the Obama administration. It was also embraced by Republicans as well. And so you have a number of states that have enacted laws tying the results of summative testing to teacher evaluations, but that has a number of, whether it's proper or not, and we could certainly argue that, but that has a number of unintended consequences to it. When you overemphasize the value of testing, then what you get are the negative impacts of teachers teaching to the tests, and overemphasis, you know, less education in the classroom and more time spent on preparing for the test. You have an increased tendency to cheat. So there's all kinds of negative impacts with that, as well as the idea that summative assessments maybe should not be used or shouldn't be an important part of teacher compensation and teacher evaluation. So all of these things, yeah, come to the fore, and we're seeing kind of it's a grassroots effort to reduce the impact of testing. And I expect that if we do not see a reauthorization of ESEA, we're going to continue to see this movement pick up steam. Hopefully, if we do get a reauthorization of ESEA, it will solve some of the problems related to opting out.
Right, and the assessment community has to watch this closely, because if the opt-out trend does continue, it has potential for impacting the validity of assessments themselves. And for example, a question would be raised is how representative the assessments can be seen to be. Talk about that.
Right, yes. Yeah. So states have to be concerned with the opt-out movement, because if you have a significant number of opt-outs, they don't know what that means in terms of the validity of their results and whether they can compare them from 1 year to the next. So they have to assess what does the opt-out cohort look like? You know, is it representative of the student population as a whole, or does it skew to one or both tails, the higher performing student tail or the lower performing student tail? So states are, this is a big concern of states right now, whether or not their results are valid. And then finally, there's really the issue, there is a federal requirement that 95% of students are tested. And so the feds are wrestling with what do they do with states that aren't meeting this requirement? You know, is there going to be some type of penalty or, you know, funding impact, et cetera? So there's potentially a lot of impact of opt-outs on being able to accurately measure student progress.
Right. You know, and so much of this, as you've been pointing out, is about the assessment community and its impact on that area, on teachers, on state systems, and even political concerns at the federal level from Washington. And I don't want to forget the students themselves, the learners who are actually taking these tests. And so let's finally talk about education. When it comes to both education itself as well as the assessment of the education that's been delivered, what's important to see as a trend is the rise of computerized testing. We've seen the computer in the classroom, but now we are seeing a majority of students taking their tests on the computer as well.
Computerized testing continues to increase in states, and I think a large majority of students will be testing online in 2015 and 16. In the states that we've surveyed so far, it's a very high percentage of students that will be testing. This includes both fixed form computerized testing and computer adaptive testing that's used by the SPAC states taking the summative assessment, as well as a couple other states that we've surveyed that do their own assessments. I think computer adaptive testing is something that is gaining increased importance, and we're seeing increased use of it in states. And there are, a few advantages that are mentioned that are associated with computer adaptive testing that might play into some of these trends. One being that you can assess where a student is on the scale perhaps a little bit faster than you might be able to on a fixed form test. Secondly, computer adaptive testing is said to be able to better identify those students that are at both ends of the achievement tail.
Right, and it also, as perceived benefits, it would increase accessibility for students with special needs.
Right, now that's a benefit of online testing, whether it's computer adaptive or fixed form testing. So there are a bunch of benefits, I think, of online testing, whether it be computer adaptive or fixed form. The first one you just mentioned, and I think one of the prime benefits that the states we discussed mention, is it really increases the accessibility for students with special needs. I know both of the assessment consortia worked on this, very hard with their testing vendors to make sure that supports for students with special needs are available within the testing platform. And so what happens today is that there's a personal student profile that's entered into the system, which details any particular accommodations that student needs. And when that student logs in and an item is presented on the screen, it automatically will adjust, whether it be size or whether it be the background, or give students the ability to mask certain parts of the item. Those are all readily enabled with computerized testing, and I think that's a great benefit. Another benefit is that just in general, you know, there are more things you can do on the computer. It's just a better way to fully assess student knowledge. A third benefit of online testing is that, you know, in today's world, in this generation, is the digital generation. And so it provides an opportunity to better engage the student in the test. And several states that we talk to report that students do like the test better and that they're more engaged. Fourth, you can get results faster, at least for those items that are scored by the computer. There's improved security with online testing, which is another benefit. And then finally, although this is somewhat perplexing to me, is that you should have lower costs in computerized testing. But a lot of states aren't seeing that right now, and that's a bit perplexing to me. I don't know if it's first-year startup costs or whether they're including the upgrades and local infrastructure that are required to implement online testing. But that's one of the interesting things that we'll have to keep our eye on, is whether states are getting the benefits of all of these things, but in particular lower costs.
Right, and that is something that you are following closely there at ASG, Barry, and interesting results there, because sometimes counterintuitive results and mixed results, certainly at best. And when it comes to technology spend in the classroom, I suppose it really always does have to be based on educational value. But as somebody who keeps an eye trained on costs, there's got to be a balance there.
Right. Well, the main, as you just mentioned, I mean, the justification for, you know, buying computers and upgrading technology needs to be for the education of students as opposed to the testing of students. And, you know, what we see is there are some studies that have shown that when teachers and students use technology in the lesson planning and in delivering of lessons, students are then better able to use technology not only to take the test, but their results improve. So it's important to upgrade technology, the use of technology in our schools, for the purpose of better educating our students. Now, I think it's kind of a shame where the entire nation and every industry in the nation has been online for, you know, decades now, but we're just starting to get there in the classroom. And we need to see that, we need to see the increased use of technology in the classroom. I think right now testing is driving it, but really we've got the tail wagging the dog there.
Well, it's been a really fascinating look, a kind of, as I mentioned at the start, a quick prep course on current trends in the student assessment market. We've been speaking with Barry Topol, who's a managing partner with Assessment Solutions Group. And now it's your chance to ask Barry a question, and we ask you to use the chat box in the lower right-hand corner of the screen. Let us know what's on your mind, and we'll try to get to a few of those questions in the time that we have left. And Barry, I do appreciate your really, I think, a very comprehensive summary of the situation. And again, these are issues that you follow pretty closely at ASG, at Assessment Solutions Group. And we've been talking about the chances for a passage of a new Elementary and Secondary Education Act, the ESA Act. There's a question here about that sort of follows on the localization of assessments. And it's apparently proposed in the new ESEA, the possibility of districts selecting and using their own summative assessments in place of a state assessment. What do you think of this, and do you see districts going this route, is the question. Would they choose, and would they be well off to choose to use their own summative assessments?
I don't expect to see a lot of that happen. I think, again, for one of the provision in ESEA says, one, it has to be approved by the state, which means it really it has to be of high quality. Districts really don't have the funds to develop, a complete summative assessment on their own. It's just too expensive. So what I'd like to see is, as I mentioned before, what I hope we see is districts developing kind of mini assessments that align well with the state summative assessment. For example, in New Hampshire, there are districts that are developing performance type assessments, and in some grades, those will be used in place of the state summative assessment, but only in certain grades. And so you'll have most students taking the state summative assessment, but in certain years, you'll have students that are taking more performance type assessments. So that's really what I'd like to see, is again this unification of a balanced assessment system between districts and the state.
Right. And, there's a question here about cost when it comes to computerized testing. And again, as I say, one of your particular areas of expertise, Barry, at Assessment Solutions Group is looking at the financial issues related to assessment. Can you tell us just what your surveys tell you about the struggle that schools have with the cost of adopting computerized testing?
Right. The main cost in computerized assessing is obviously making sure that technology is available for students to take the test. So that means having enough PCs, the bandwidth, the communications infrastructure, routers and servers and Wi-Fi and so on and so forth. So the biggest problem, that the states are having is that most of them have the connection speed now and kind of the communications infrastructure, but they don't have the PCs that are needed to test all the students quickly. And so what you have is you've had to have an expansion of testing windows, and in many places students have to go into a computer lab to take the test, and this means that the computers can't be used for instruction. So you've got, the bulk of the costs that we're seeing are being incurred at the district level, really to purchase PCs so students can take the tests online.
Well, you're very topical. I was just reading today that Taylor Swift is working with an education publisher to donate books into schools. Maybe we can get it to donate some computers as well.
That'd be great. I think she can afford it.
All right, I was going to say she could probably afford a few of those for a few states. Well, I want to thank Barry Topol, managing partner at Assessment Solutions Group, for joining us today. His email address is there, btopol@assessmentgroup.org. You can check out Assessment Group online at that URL, assessmentgroup.org. I want to thank my colleagues working on this program and on various issues related to it in the assessment community, Andrew Campana. And on behalf of all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thank you for joining us today. My name is Chris Keneally. Have a great day.